What's the game-changing realization that helped you build a high-performing team? That question is at the center of every episode of the HR Impact Show. Every HR professional wants to build a team that has empowered managers, engaged employees, and an organization that's striving to become elite. The challenge is that you're often told to do more with less. We're going to fix that. Every week, we will feature executive and senior HR leaders from across the country, and they will share with us their actionable insights and best practices that's going to help empower you to create an engaged, elite workforce. Here's the show. Thanks for joining us today on the HR Impact Show. This is your friendly neighborhood talent strategy nerd, Dr. Jim. If you rise through the ranks within an organization, how does that inform your decisioning when it comes to employee development and retention? The answer to that question can vary greatly depending on industry and organizational culture. It's no different in the K-12 education space with a couple of key distinctions. One, you're not dealing with defined budgets on a year-to-year basis, and that creates some constraints that you have to deal with. And two, you're not facing generally the crisis of people leaving your profession. So how does that shape what you do? How does that impact your hiring, your onboarding, your development decisions? These are just some of the questions that we're going to tackle today in our conversation with Dr. Leslie Bergstrom, superintendent of the Oregon School District in Wisconsin. This is part of our special series focusing in on the K-12 education leadership space in order to identify the leadership best practices that are yielding teacher retention outcomes. And we're going to be diving into that conversation today. So let me give you a little bit of background on Dr. Bergstrom and her story. So she's been with the Oregon School District since 2003. Prior to becoming superintendent, she served as the deputy superintendent, director of instruction and student achievement, and the principal at Rome Corners Intermediate School. She's proactively been addressing educator retention and recruitment as a key value in the Oregon School District. She's often stated that she knows that educators in the classroom are the difference makers for the students, and she wants our excellent educators to stay in the profession and in the Oregon School District. Leslie, since we're besties now, I'm going to go by first name basis. Welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here because this is a topic that is an absolutely crucial one for K-12 education, particularly as fewer and fewer people are entering the profession.
I'm looking forward to this conversation because when we look at a lot of my areas of focus and various conversations, I'm a big retention nerd. So obviously this is going to be something that I'm interested in hearing from you about. Before we get started, what I'd like you to do is share a little bit of your perspective in terms of your district and what makes that unique. And the reason why that's important is that you're in a top 100 school district in Wisconsin. And I think digging into what makes your district unique is going to be helpful for other leaders in the K-12 education space who might be facing similar circumstances. So I'd like you to share that with the audience.
The Oregon School District is a school district that is a combination of urban and suburban and rural. And we're a suburb of the city of Madison, which is the capital in Wisconsin. We have about 4,300 students, 7 schools. And we cross multiple municipalities, even multiple counties. We have quite that geographical reach. And another thing I think that is unique regarding our situation, if you think about K-12 as a whole, is we are in Dane County, which is the fastest growing county in Wisconsin. And it is one in which there are a lot of people are attracted to the area. So the school districts, even in a time of declining population, the school districts are at least staying even, if not growing slightly. And it's competitive. Very often we are hiring one another's teachers. And even though there is a competitive aspect to it, I also want to say that in Dane County, we're extraordinarily collaborative and willing to share and problem solve with one another. So there's a bit of a dichotomy. During hiring season, there's a level of competition, but other than that, it's a remarkably collaborative place.
One of the things that's going to be helpful in terms of shaping the perspective, or at least the lens for this conversation, you mentioned that within your district, you have a combination of urban, suburban, and rural schools that are represented. And that's pretty interesting to me because building a cohesive talent strategy in those sort of separate ecosystems is going to be challenging. Tell us a little bit more about how you've navigated that challenge where you have such diversity in terms of the communities that you're serving and how you actually build a cohesive talent strategy across those communities.
One of the things I've noticed throughout the entire county, and it certainly certainly applies for us, is that when we have someone who lives within the community and is also a teacher, they're very interested in teaching in the same community in which they live. And so that really does definitely help us during hiring season within the schools, because there are some really excellent teachers who've been somewhere else for 5, 7, 10 years, but now they want to be on the same calendar as their own children. So they want to teach where they're living. And that has happened to us both ways. We've received amazing teachers for that reason, and we've had some really great teachers leave for that reason. That is one of the ways our geography impacts us. I think the other way is with brand new, fresh from college educators. They really don't want to live in a suburb. They would rather live in the city. And so there's that piece too, where we, of course, do attract some of the new graduates, but they rarely want to live here. They very often want to live in the more urban environment and commute to work. So there's pluses and minuses with our geography for certain.
One of the things that's going to be useful for us to chat about is you quote unquote grew up in the district, and now you're leading the district from a K-12 education leadership perspective. And one of the things that I'm curious about is when you think about your experience growing up in the district, how did that shape your leadership philosophy, your hiring philosophy, your retention philosophy?
I definitely feel that my leadership strategy throughout my many different positions within the district has been one that's relied heavily on the formation of positive, caring, and trusting relationships. And I think that's really the basis for much of what we do within our district, how we interact with one another as the adults who are in charge of the learning of 4,300 students. So because I've had so many positions and worked with so many different people over the course of time, I have developed relationships with most of the staff, and if not a reputation for being someone that is relational. And I think that matters, because when people talk to somebody at a soccer game or a party, what's it like to work in Oregon? I want people to be able to say, it's great. I love my principal. I have great colleagues. Oh, and I know the superintendent. You can go to her for anything. That's the kind of feel that I would like the people who work in our district to express to others, because I want that to be what comes through at every level of the organization.
What I find interesting about your answer is that it gets into, I'm going to get super nerdy here. It gets into sort of organizational commitment. It's one of those drivers of turnover. So as soon as you see people lose their commitment to the organizations that they work with, there's a whole lot of cascading negative outcomes that happens that drives that person out of the organization that they happen to be at. You mentioned you want people that work within your district to be evangelists for the district. Hey, it's great working here and all of that. Tell me a little bit about how you actually get that to show up in how principals are interacting with their assistant principals, with the educators that roll into them. How does that actually show up in the day-to-day lives of the educators that are within your district?
The first thing that is really important is the hiring process itself. You need to be able to have the hiring experience reflect the values that you want to be evangelized throughout your district. I think we have said at the district office that the most important thing we do is hire great people. Because as you said in the very beginning, it's the people in the schools and in the classrooms that are making the difference for our students. So our biggest job is hiring the best people possible to do that work. And so it's, once again, a very relational and personal experience. Our staff serve on committees in the hiring process, so they're a part of who's joining their team. And then also, nobody in the school district, no professional staff in the school district is hired without sitting in an interview with myself and the director of learning and student achievement, because we want to be able to really know who we're bringing on. And we want to be able to say, this person is someone who, given their past professional experience, this is someone who's committed to the same things we're committed to. And it is, of course, our values, but a part of our values is how we treat one another, how we interact. That's a big part of what we hire for. And since most of our principals have also been have come up through the system, they're also a big part of that.
You described an extremely collaborative hiring process. You also described high degree of involvement that you have in the hiring process where you're the backstop for the whole thing. So when you look at that structure from a hiring perspective and the hiring perspective that embeds district values into that process, what have you observed in terms of that structured process and its impact on your teacher retention and development outcomes?
I think that with our retention and development outcomes, it's always multiple things and not any one thing. But I do know that when we are recruiting, and a really excellent recruitment process is a part of the retention process, people say either at the time or they tell me later after they feel more comfortable, they say, one of the things that made me say yes is, I couldn't believe I was meeting with the superintendent. And it's the position, right? It's not necessarily me or anything I'm saying or doing, but it's the idea of we put that much time and attention and value to it that even if you're interviewing for a half-time position, you're still meeting with me because your work with students is valuable.
There's something really interesting about what you just mentioned, and especially the impact that your involvement in the hiring process has had on some of those teachers. Now, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a superintendent who might be listening to this conversation, and maybe they're from a large school district and that hires a bunch of teachers. And they might say, yeah, that's all great and fine, Leslie. That makes sense for like a rural district or a suburban district.
Yep.
How can I take the principle of that and make it a reality for a district like mine, which is much bigger and probably has more hiring in terms of volume that happens? What would be your suggestion to that listener that's probably making that observation or asking that question?
Right. And that makes a lot of sense because if our district were even another 1,000 students, perhaps that wouldn't even be possible any longer. But it isn't about the process itself. It's about how the process makes people feel. So whether it's the superintendent in the role or it's the principal or it's the HR director, whomever it happens to be, how will people feel about the organization when they walk away from that experience? I think that's what is a key as opposed to who's actually doing the work. Now, the fact that I'm the superintendent, that's a plus, but it doesn't have to be that way because as I said, it's more about how you feel. It's no longer us trying to decide which of 400 teachers we're going to select. It's not like that anymore. Now, it's also we ourselves as an organization, as much as the interviewee may be selling themselves.
So one of the things that I gather from that answer, it's the candidate experience that you're talking about is what does your hiring process look like from a candidate experience perspective? And that leads to a lot of other conversations about, okay, how can I deploy my leadership team and get them upskilled and prepared to have the kind of conversations that lead to really positive candidate experience conversations that occur. In that vein, tell us a little bit more about you're probably already planning for when your district is 1,000 students. So what are the things that you've done within your organization to get your downline prepared for that sort of growth and skilled in a way where they're translating those really strong candidate experiences to their interview process, to their development conversations?
One of the things I would say is I feel very confident that if I were gone tomorrow, the district office team members that I work with every day and our principals could leave this process beautifully. And part of that is due to the fact that how we want the people to feel when they're having this interview experience with us, that's really what we're trying to get at for everybody within the district. We want them to feel connected and valued and seen. And that's how we try to interact with everybody all the time. And because so many of our principals have been with us for so long, first as teachers, very often then administrative intern, and then assistant principals or principals, that is how they have come about doing their business with families, with students, and also with employees. So it's really embedded in the fact that people are moving through the system and they're being a part of it from the very beginning. And I love hiring new people from outside of the system because they bring a great perspective, but we've been very successful at cultivating internal talent. And so that's one of the reasons I feel very confident that the whole idea of what we're trying to accomplish with our interview process goes far beyond me or our current level of growth.
I love the emphasis that you just pointed to, developing your internal talent. And I think when you're looking at just broader talent strategy, it's always a lighter lift of growing your own talent versus having to go outside your organization and find the talent that you want. But I want to dig into that a little bit more, because this is a conversation about keeping educators in the profession and also developing them to lead within their districts or within other districts and getting them prepared to take on those responsibilities. Tell us a little bit more about what you put in your team put into place to better allow for that. If you've got this track record of growing your own and developing your own and getting people ready to lead, what are the elements of that has worked really well for you?
There are multiple pieces. One of the things, and we have multiple pieces for a really significant reason. And the first is that when we had a task force on educator compensation back in 2016, one of the members who was a teacher spoke about how important it was to have pathways to other types of positive impacts on our students that weren't necessarily administrative. Because a lot of people want to do something different and have a positive impact, but they don't want to be a principal. And that's okay. That job isn't for everybody. But there's a lot of really great teachers who can spread in a positive way what they know about how to make an impact on kids. So we have tried to develop pathways for leadership within all of our buildings that isn't formal and positional. So we have, every building has a leadership team that is comprised of 7 members that, and they don't talk about things like too many cell phones in the hallways. They talk about leadership strategies related to high quality instruction. We also have teams that co-examine behavior data and look at how we can better support our students in developing their lagging skills. So we provide multiple ways for people to be leaders, including instructional coaches that have nothing to do with principals. Now, to cultivate a pipeline of really talented administrators, we have a program called the Administrative Intern. And that is an educator who applies to serve as an intern in one of our any of our schools through K-8. And they spend 3 years serving in that role. And they're guaranteed at the end of 3 years, they would be a very attractive candidate for a job that happened to be open, or we would support them if they wanted to apply elsewhere, or if they said, that was great, but now I want to go back to the classroom, they have their contract and we'll make sure they have a great place within our district to teach. So that helps us because they attend all of the administrative team meetings, the workshops, the learning sessions. So they are growing in their capacity as they are an intern. And if they, which at the end, it sometimes happens where we don't have anything open, so they apply somewhere else. And when they do, I think that's a beautiful outcome because what we've done is we've helped someone realize their leadership potential and now they'll go influence potentially who knows how many students in a positive way. So whether the person becomes a part of our permanent administrative team or goes elsewhere, it's a plus for kids. So we believe really strongly in what that program brings to our students.
The aspect that I like the most about what you just said is that you're taking the approach of having everybody within your district look at their career path as a lattice more than a ladder. The default for a lot of organizations, public sector or private sector, is to push the message out that it's up or out. And what I really like about what you just described is that you're really putting the decision in the hands of the people at the front lines to decide what path do they want to go. So the question that I have on that front, I can see how that makes sense for a mid-size or larger school district. I want to look at the other end of the spectrum where you're a smaller school district and maybe you don't have the headcount to create that lattice within your organization. So how could you engineer that focus on impact within a smaller school district and still have it be meaningful where educators are feeling like they're being developed in different ways?
When your budget does not allow you to have administrative intern positions as an example, I think that it's still really important as a leader, whether it's a building leader or a district leader, to know your people as individuals, to know your colleagues as individuals, and to know where it is that they want to go. and to find ways to support that development. So if you are a building principal and you know that there is a teacher in your building who has a high capacity for serving as a building level leader, and perhaps they've even said they're interested, or perhaps they haven't, but you just see it, I think there are ways to support them and to develop that without the label of intern. Like, I had amazing mentors throughout my career. And when I was a teacher, the mentorship that I received from several principals who were just wonderful human beings who said, hey, I think you'd be good at this. Let me give you this opportunity. I never had the title of intern, but they took me to meetings. They sat and explained things to me. They asked my opinion. They recognized the fact that this was an area of interest for me and fed it. That doesn't take money. That just takes noticing.
Wow. It's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show. I like what you said there. One thing that it has got me thinking, you're talking about you have to be intentional about taking the time to ask those questions.
Yeah.
But you said something interesting in your answer, is that if people express that interest to you, then you have to create ways for them to feed that interest.
Uh-huh.
My question is, what about the people that aren't raising their hands? What are the things administrators and leaders within school districts, what are the things that they need to be doing to identify the people that have that interest but aren't vocal about it? Because you have to find pathways for the people that aren't saying stuff too.
You do. And that is, once again, it goes down to the idea of knowing people. And that means having a relationship where it is comfortable for you to be able to talk to people about what it is you notice and what it is you'd love to see, if they are interested, or being able to know them well enough to just ask the question, where would you like to be, or what opportunities are intriguing to you? Because I want to make sure that you continue to grow as a professional. And I am always on the lookout for things that are connected to the interests of the people with whom I work. So if there's something, I want you to tell me what's intriguing to you, what makes you feel curious and excited. And if you're able as a leader, no matter what, whether you're leading a department or a building or a district, if you have connections with people where you could actually ask those questions and know that I haven't heard from so-and-so, I don't know what so-and-so wants to do or where they want to be or what's really interesting to them, you have to be able to seek those more quiet people out. I know in our district, my board every year will ask me to talk about the entire administrative team and where they want to grow and what is interesting to them as far as their next step, because they want to keep people too. And they want to make sure that I know that about people and that I'm investing time and energy into ensuring growth for everybody.
When I hear you say that, I think one of the immediate things that comes to mind is I have a loose understanding of what the day-to-day looks like for an administrator and an educator. There's never enough time in the day to get done all the things that you need to get done. So how do you build time and space to have these sort of conversations where you're identifying development opportunities, where there's specific things or habits that you built that allowed you to do that? And if there were, share with the class.
I work to schedule with a lot of one-on-one time. And I know that it's quite easy to deal with principals. They expect to meet with the superintendent on a pretty regular basis. But I think what's also really important is to find the time to do that with associate principals, because they're usually working with under the direction of the principal. And so I think in many places, they probably don't have a very direct communication line with the superintendent. And so I try to make sure that exists for them, because they're very talented people and could very well be our next set of principals if they wanted to be. I also meet with all the administrative interns once a month, and it's a small group of us. There's only 5 administrators or interns and myself sitting around a table. So I think a lot of conversations happen then. And I know that it sounds, and perhaps even a trait when I'm thinking about building level leadership, that it is walking around the beginning of the day, checking in with people. Walking around at the end of the day, checking in with people. It's about finding ways to make a one-on-one connection in as many opportunities as you can. Sometimes it's bus duty. Sometimes it's lunch duty. Sometimes it's what sitting outside, standing with someone while they're doing recess duty. But it's making sure that people feel they have a connection to you and they can be open about what they need to stay, to feel like they're being challenged.
If I'm summarizing what you just mentioned, is that if you want to identify opportunities to connect with people and also understand what is important to them in terms of their development track, you as a leader need to be visible. You can't be doing this from behind your desk. So I think that's an important sort of thread that we're pulling out. Really great conversation so far, Leslie. I appreciate you sharing your perspective. I think one of the things that I'm curious about is, what did you do to identify what the top priorities were that you wanted to focus on within the district? Give us a little bit of line of sight into that.
We've always had an extraordinarily visionary board that actually did things like write position papers related to instruction and the future of education. And that component has always worked really well with our board on vision for teaching and learning and the whole child emphasis. I think that the part of our culture that is about the adults in the system that make all of that happen and how they work with one another and how they interact with one another, that's a part of the culture that has really been very values driven, and it's been all baked from the inside. Like they were talking about this all the time, and we're thinking about things we do through that lens, to the point where now we know that we don't have at this moment in time a retention concern, particularly with our professional staff. But we're looking down the road and we're saying, what's next? We can't just rest on the pieces that we already have in place. We have to think about what we should be planning for, how we're going to need to evolve to continue to meet the employment needs. People who are currently educators and will become educators. And so that has taken a little bit of a different kind of strategizing.
You just mentioned that it required a different strategy to go ahead and execute. Tell us a little bit more about what that involved and how you actually pulled it all together.
Very often people use surveys, and we use surveys too, and we think they're great, but they're really only one tool. For a few years in a row, really the post-pandemic, I think where we had the scores that were most concerning to us in our staff surveys were questions that were connected to, I feel like my workload is manageable. We weren't even scoring well in comparison to other districts. So we knew that was something that we had to investigate if we wanted to continue to have some level of professional sustainability within the district. So the first thing we did after gathering some of that information from our surveys was to conduct some stay interviews. We are randomly selected. I suppose we have about 700 employees when you include our wonderful coaching staff and club advisors and such. And we selected about 38 to 40 people and asked them, after introducing it as an idea, if they would be willing to sit down one-on-one with me to talk about why they stay in the profession, what got them into it, why they stay, and what are the things that would ever make them consider leaving? And I did a lot of those conversations, and I learned a lot from people. And it was also a part of reestablishing that relational connection also. They could sit with me and they could tell me what was really bothering them about being a teacher in the year, at that time, 2023 or 2022. We took our survey data, that stay interview data, and then we had several years of data from interviewing people in their second year of employment. We sit down and do a one-on-one with them in year two. Tell us what it was like to be new. What are the things that we can improve on? What are the things you thought we did really well in helping you be prepared and acclimate to the expectations of the job and the culture and the needs of the students? So we took those data sets and we brought them to a task force that included our staff members and community members. And it was run by our amazing HR director and a school board member. And they went to this group and they said, here's what our staff tells us. What do you see as the themes? And the biggest theme, honestly, was time. People wanted to be able to continue to do the good things that they were doing for our kids, our students, but they also wanted to feel like they were doing more of it within the confines of the professional day. And they wanted to be able to feel like they were doing a really good job. And they often felt as if the demands were so high with the limited amount of time that it made people feel like they just weren't enough. And that's really uneasy thing to consistently be feeling over the course of your career. So we took the data, we looked at what research tells us is really critical, why people stay in their jobs as educators, what are we already doing to address those areas, and then given the data and given what we know, what are we missing? One of the key pieces was how to create time, how to use maybe the calendar, the school year calendar differently, how to use the daily calendar or daily time differently. Because so, that's what people want.
It's really interesting that you took the time to listen and hear from your team. I think that's really important. And it's probably one of the things that leaders should do a lot more of and more consistently is ask for feedback and ask for what are you seeing? What would make your day-to-day better? The gap is that oftentimes organizations will do a lot of those exercises. Oh, we want your feedback and then not do anything with it. So you got this feedback. What did you do next to demonstrate your commitment to fixing some of these themes that came in?
Our school board put together a charter for a professional sustainability task force, which included community members and professional staff. And it was run by our talented HR director and a really dedicated school board member. And we had six sessions over the course of 2 months where we looked at all of the data we had collected. We looked at what the research tells us is critical to educators as far as why they stay in the profession or in their particular school. And then we talked about then what are the missing pieces, right? What aren't we doing that we need to be doing to create some level of sustainability within the profession itself? And I think the key thing that came from the committee was people want time. They really want flexibility. And time. Flexibility is very hard when you don't have enough substitutes on a daily basis. So giving people more time off when students are in session would be a really challenging thing to do. And I think it would have a negative impact on our kids. So we started talking about what can we do with our calendar that perhaps could give people more breaks during the school year to allow them a little bit of that time that they needed. And then also, is there maybe a possibility of late arrivals or early releases a certain number of times a month to ensure staff had the time to do the professional learning community collaboration that we are stressing as so important.
Really good stuff. I really like the emphasis that you put on identifying what was the most important element that educators cared about in terms of their decision to stay within an organization. I think that's really valuable. And then baking that into a lot of the stuff that we talked about earlier shows that it's actually having some impact. When you think back to the conversation that we've had, what are the big things that you want listeners, and particularly those listeners who might be leaders of school districts, what are the big things that they should be taking back to their district and putting into place that's going to help them better engage and retain their teaching staff?
First of all, I think that we have, K-12 has amazing leaders. And I don't think you get to be, it's an honor to be able to serve in that capacity. And I don't think people get to that role without knowing how important it is to really listen to people, right? To listen more and talk less, and to obviously ensure that the experiences people have either onboarding to your organization or being in your organization, to make sure that those experiences reflect the values that you all say you believe in, right? So it's being a good listener who is continually reflecting on the impact of the organization and really knows how to gather people around the idea that we are all first and foremost here for our kids. And it's the people in the schools that make a difference, and we need to be paying attention to what they need so that they can be the best people possible for the students.
Great stuff. If folks want to continue the conversation with you, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Probably email. My email is lcb2@oregonsd.org.
Great stuff, Leslie. I appreciate you hanging out with us. And when I think about the conversation that we've had, there's a couple of things that I want to pull out that I think is important for all listeners and maybe even some of the other K-12 leaders to keep in mind and put into place. I think the first thing that strikes me about this conversation is just philosophically how you've looked at the district and career pathing for everybody within the district. And I referenced this earlier when it came up, that you've really operationalized the mindset that people should be looking at their careers as a lattice versus a ladder. where can you make impact as an educator or as an administrator within your district in ways that don't necessarily mean that you're going vertically within the organization. And I think that's an important concept for any organization, and particularly it might be useful for those districts who are trying to offer growth opportunities within the district to their educators. So I think that's an important component of the conversation. But the other element that really I think is worth mentioning is creating a habit of listening with intentionality to act. And the reason why that's important is that you have a responsibility as a leader to convince your people to stay. That's your duty every single day, is convincing your people to stay. And if you ask for feedback from them, you're going to be derelict in your duties if you don't take that into action. And if you're not in the habit of consistently asking, you have no line of sight into how you can positively impact the lives of your people, because you have no idea what your target is. You need to create that habit of listening, and then you need to follow that up with action. And that's going to give you a recipe for sustained success. And it's probably going to surface some things that you weren't even thinking about. So those are really some key things that I appreciate you sharing and that I took away from the conversation. We appreciate you hanging out. For those of you who've been listening to this episode, if you like the conversation, make sure you leave us a review. And if you haven't already done so, make sure you join the HR Impact community. You can find that at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time, where we will have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build. Thanks for listening to this episode of the HR Impact Show. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time, where we'll have another guest who's going to share with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.